really like a plan. I like it when people follow what they're meant to be doing, and it kind of unsettles me a bit when things don't go to plan. And I think I cover that quite well. I don't know if I come across as being easygoing, but inside something is raging, going, this isn't a plan, this isn't a plan. Please tell me there's other people that are like that. It's not just me, really. I thought Sam would raise her hand. I thought that was Sam Madison, if you know her. I thought she would be able to get on the same page with me. But I think that most people like to have a sense of where they're going. Even if you're not like me and you're not the planning to the nth degree, I think most people like to have a sense of direction. They like to know where they're going, even on a micro level. You know, we plan what we're going to wear in the morning, what we're going to eat. We meal plan as the head of the household and who does the cooking and the shopping. We meal plan what we're going to plan for the next week. And there's lots of things, I think, that we plan for in our work. So my work gets us to do things called SMART targets or SMART goals. And then you evaluate how well you've gone towards those goals in the year. And they do things like, I think as an adult, you're encouraged to do things like 5-year plans and 1-year plans and what the short and medium term and long term goals are for you. So I think we are encouraged to plan. And probably on different levels, it unsettles us. You know, me, I get really unsettled when a plan doesn't go as it's meant to. But other people will deal with that with varying degrees. So it surprised me a little bit when about 2 months ago, I felt God asking me a very unsettling question. And if you're a planner, this is the type of question that you don't really want to be asked. The question was, are you ready to be disrupted? God, come on, you know me, I'm a planner. I like to know where I'm going. I like to know the steps to get there. Am I ready to be disrupted? How do you even answer that question? Maybe it's not you, God. Maybe I've heard wrong, and I'll just put that one to the side, because maybe that's not actually you, because you know that I like to plan. You know that I like to be where I'm, knowing where I'm going and planning the steps towards that. But it didn't go away. And I thought, am I ready to be disrupted? Okay, how can we think about this? And I remembered when I was a little girl and my sisters and I would annoy my parents by, when they'd say something to us like, what do you want for dinner? We'd mess around with the sentence. And you know, if you put stress or emphasis on a different word in a sentence, it can change the meaning of the sentence. So for instance, if you ask, what do you want? You can say, what do you want? Or you can say, what do you want? Or you can say, what do you want? And my sisters and I used to do that all the time, and our parents would just go, ugh, and it just used to be really annoying. So I thought, okay, maybe I'll do that with this question. Maybe I'll go focus on different words in this question and see if it helps me to make any sense of this. So the first stress, I guess you could put on it, is, are you ready to be disrupted? And I thought that I think I know the English language pretty well. I'm a speech therapist. I like the English language. And I thought I knew what disrupted actually meant. I thought it's a bit like interrupt, isn't it? You know, disrupt, interrupt, they kind of mean the same thing. But I thought I'll have a look and see what the difference is. So the definition of interrupt is to stop something from happening for a short period. So you're having a conversation with someone, somebody jumps in and go, oh, sorry to interrupt, but da 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 da. And then you go back into the conversation that you're having. Disrupt means to prevent something from continuing as usual or as expected. To prevent something from continuing as usual or as expected. I was quite surprised. It's actually not that negative. I kind of thought disruption, we have this idea that it's something really negative, but that definition, to prevent something from continuing as usual or as expected, isn't actually that negative. It's like a change in direction. It's something that comes out and changes how you expect things to happen. So I thought, okay, making me feel a little bit better about this question. But then I thought, is this even biblical? You know, can I have a look and see if the word disrupt is even in the Bible? And do you know what? I looked through all of the standard versions and all the weird versions as well, and I could not really find the word disrupt in there. I think there were a couple of the maybe more, I don't know if you'd call them dodgy versions of the Bible, but other versions that aren't so common, let's call them that, where there was disrupt, but nothing really that fit the context of this question. So I thought, okay, that's not really giving me much clarity. What else can I do? Ah, there's another oracle that I have not consulted yet. Google. Let's Google disrupt and see what comes up. So I didn't just Google disrupt. I thought, let's keep it biblical. Let's put Jesus disrupt. And this is what I found. I found a blog by a guy called Owen Strachan, who wrote a book called Risky Gospel. And I wanted to share this with you. It said, God has been in the disruptive business for millennia. He specializes in it. He seems to love nothing more than to crash land into people's lives and alter them. He has a particular affinity for those minding their own business. Normal folks who are off the grid and out of the fray. If you're carving out a quiet little existence in the Bible, then there are better than excellent odds that either a ferocious-looking angel or the altogether normal-looking but utterly transformative Jesus is showing up in 3, 2, 1. This happens over and over, and once you see it in Scripture, you can't unsee it, and you won't want to. I thought, wow, okay, let me think about this. Actually, yeah, I think it's true. When God shows up in the Old Testament and when Jesus shows up in the New Testament, people's lives change. They change direction. Things that they thought would happen don't happen, and things that they didn't think would happen do happen. It's like a change to the normal day-to-day rhythm of life, and it takes on an altogether different direction for a lot of people in the Bible. I want to talk to you a little bit. I mean, there's so many examples in the Bible that you could look at, and I'd encourage you to go and look at this. So Abraham, you've got Moses, you've got Gideon. I want to talk to you about Joseph in the Old Testament. And if you haven't read his story before, you'll find it in Genesis chapter 37. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the gist of it is this. We meet Joseph when he's 17, and he's one of the youngest of many brothers. And he's kind of a favourite. You may have heard of him. He's the one that has the really pretty, colourful coat that's given to him by his father. And I tell you what, if there's anything that makes siblings a bit angry, it's when there's a favourite. And Joseph didn't really help this because he was also a dreamer, and he shared a couple of his dreams with his brothers. And the interpretation of those dreams were that his brothers were going to bow down to him. I'm the eldest, and I don't think I'd be well pleased if my younger sister came to me one day and said, you know what, one day you're going to bow down to me. I don't think I'd be that happy. Probably wouldn't go to the extent that Joseph's brothers do, because they plot to kill him. Doesn't end up happening, and they end up selling him to some traders who take him to Egypt and sell him to a guy called Potiphar, who's the Pharaoh's captain of the guard. Now, I don't know about you, but I kind of look at this and think, that's probably the first disruption to whatever Joseph's plan was for his life. I mean, he was the dreamer. He thought, yep, my brothers are going to bow down to him. And all of a sudden, he's a servant. Bit of a disruption, bit of a change, okay? Next up, Joseph, who's quite a strapping young lad. I like to think of him as my Joseph down the back, a bit like that. A strapping young lad. And Potiphar's wife decides that she'd like to quite maybe try it on with him, see if she can, have some fun with him. But he has none of it. He's an honourable guy, and he says no. So she tries to grab him, and she grabs his coat, which she then uses with her husband as evidence to say, oh, look what Joseph did. He tried it on with me. And naturally, Potiphar gets really, really angry and throws him in jail. Slight disruption, okay? He's gone from being this one who's going to be a dreamer, who's going to have all his brothers bow down to him, to them being a servant, to now being in prison. I don't know what your plan for your life is, but I would suggest that being a servant and then being put in prison is not part of your plan, and I don't think it was part of Joseph's. When he's in jail, he has an opportunity to meet two of the servants of Pharaoh who've also been thrown in jail, and he interprets two of their dreams. One says that the servant is going to be restored to Pharaoh's service, and the other, unfortunately, is going to get hanged. Now, these events both happen, but instead of remembering this, the servant who has gone on to go back to the Pharaoh's service forgets, and for 2 years, Joseph is still in jail. He can't catch a break, really, this guy. Then finally, Pharaoh has a dream, and he has two dreams about seven fat cows and seven skinny cows. No one can figure out what that means. And there's a light bulb moment, and the servant who was in jail goes, oh yeah, actually, there was this guy who interpreted this dream for me, and it was spot on. So Pharaoh says, okay, brings Joseph out of jail. Joseph interprets the dream, and actually Pharaoh is so impressed that he puts him in charge of all the land to be able to, through the 7 years of plenty, gather the resources needed for the 7 years of famine. And this is kind of a disruption that you'd like to happen, really. You've gone from prisoner to being Pharaoh's top man. Now, sure enough, after the 7 years of plenty come the 7 years of famine. And 2 years into the famine, Joseph's brothers, who are suffering, come to Egypt and decide that they're going to beg for food. Now, they don't know that the guy that they're begging in front of is actually their brother, Joseph. Now, there's a lot more to this story, and I would encourage you to read it. But basically, what happens? The brothers end up bowing down to him. Okay, do you know, he was 17 when this first sort of started, and it was like 15 years later that finally his brothers are bowing down to him. And all of the things that happened in between, all of those disruptions, all of those changes of direction, I mean, he was heading in the complete opposite direction to what he might have thought, having his brothers bow down to him. But you know what? After each disruption, there's something significant that's said about his situation. So in Genesis 39, verse 2, after the first disruption, change in direction, where he's a servant, it says, the Lord was with Joseph. And in the midst of his disruption, he starts to prosper. He actually becomes the head servant of this house. But then he's thrown in jail. Okay, further disruption. But it says in verse 21 that even after he's thrown into prison, the Lord was with Joseph and showed him steadfast love and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. Okay, so he's still a prisoner. It's not exactly what he'd planned, probably, but it seems that the Lord was with him and he prospered in the midst of this disruption, in this change of plans, this turn of events that he wasn't expecting. And then finally, right at the end, when Joseph could have his revenge moment, you know, his brothers are there, they've done him wrong, and actually he could go, ha, 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 I'm in this position of authority, you've wasted my life for 15 years, all these things have happened to me. He says this, do not be distressed or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. And then further down it says, and God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant on earth and to keep alive for you many survivors. So it was not you who sent me here, but God. Wow. Okay. So if you think about disrupted, maybe, okay, it was it God? Was it not God that these things happened to him? I don't know. But Joseph sees these things as mere steps towards the position that God had promised him earlier in this dream of his brothers bowing down to him and being part of being in a position of authority. So even though disruptions might interfere with my plan, there's some way that God navigates them through to be part of something bigger. Joseph wouldn't have known that actually all of this was going to happen probably when he was 17. And probably he might not have been able to make sense of it at the time. But 15 years later, all of a sudden, he can see with clarity that this was all part of God's plan, not his plan. And you know, at this time of year, I think of Mary. What a disruption to her life it was. She was going to marry Joseph. She was going to have a normal life. And then all of a sudden, an angel shows up and says, actually, you're going to become pregnant. You're still going to be a virgin. And your son is actually going to be the Son of God. What a disruption. I mean, if you think, what would Joseph think? What will all the people around me think? I'm going to be pregnant. There's going to be no explanation for this. I mean, it's just a massive change in her plan for her life. But she says this. She says, well, actually, the angel says this. Greetings, O favored one, the Lord is with you. even though there's going to be this massive change of events. And I love it. I kind of think it's a bit humorous because the angel says all of this, but doesn't tell her, actually, you're going to have to ride on a donkey when you're 9 months pregnant. I've been 9 months pregnant recently. Don't want to be riding on a donkey. You're going to have to actually give birth to your son in really squalid conditions because there's going to be no room in the inn. You're going to place him in a feeding trough. Then you're going to have to escape because Herod's going to want to kill your son, and you're going to have to go to Egypt. Okay, wait, you know, all of that doesn't get told to her. She just has to go and live through that. But she says, I am the servant of the Lord. Let it be to me according to your word. And I wonder if, in the midst of all those other disruptions that are yet to happen, she thinks, nope, the angel told me the Lord is with me. So no matter what all of this is happening, I know what the angel said at the start. I might be seeing something that's different, but the angel told me the Lord is with me. And we know that Mary does, you know, care for Jesus, and he grows up until he starts disrupting some lives of his own. And it's when he's about my age that we read in the book of Matthew chapter 4 that he sees some young men called Simon, who is known as Peter, and Andrew by the Sea of Galilee. Now they're going about their daily business of fishing. And it's likely that their plan for their life had not quite worked out even by this stage, because actually they hadn't been picked up to further their education, and they've started this trade as a fisherman that likely in their heads they think, right, I'm going to be a fisherman for the rest of my life. Bit disappointing because it didn't kind of work out how I'd originally planned. But suddenly Jesus shows up and says, follow me and I will make you fishers of men. And it says they immediately stop what they're doing and follow him. All of a sudden, a disruption comes in and totally changes the direction of their lives. So remember what we said, with Joseph, the Lord was with him. With Mary, the Lord was with her. And actually you can say the Lord was literally with these ones. Jesus was with them. So when we think about the question, are you ready to be disrupted? If we look at these examples and many other men and women, of us, as I've said, in the Bible, while their plans may have gone out the window, when God was with them and when Jesus was with them, they were part of a plan that was much better and much bigger than their own. And maybe that's true for us. And I don't know what you're going through at the moment. Maybe you feel like your life has been disrupted already. Maybe you don't need to be ready for it to happen. Maybe it is happening for you. Maybe like Joseph, you've been given a word or a vision or a particular direction, and you feel like actually everything is heading in the opposite direction. Or maybe you're like Mary and you've got kind of just living a normal life, but you want to be part of something bigger and you feel like you could be part of something bigger. Or maybe you're like the young men and you don't even really know Jesus that well. You've kind of resigned to the fact that your life is going to go out as you plan, you know, that you're going to live your life, you're going to work. And I would encourage you that actually his ultimate plan for everyone is that you would follow him. Because that's the biggest plan that you can be part of, is an eternal plan where Jesus is your saviour and you kind of just roll with whatever happens. Remember the storm? Remember the disciples in the storm? You know, a life with Jesus is not a life that's, you know, good after good after good after good in terms of everything working out as we plan, but it's the best plan that we can be part of. And I love Romans 8. And Claire already mentioned it today, but I'm going to talk to you about Romans 8, verse 28. Where are we? And I like the Amplified version, and it says this. And we know that for those who love God, all things work together for good, for those who are called according to his purpose. I'm not saying don't plan. I think it's good to plan. I am a planner myself. If I said don't plan, I'd be a hypocrite, okay? I think we need to plan. I don't think we need to sit in bed and wait for God to tell us to get out and get dressed and go to work. I don't think we need to wait. But I also don't think we need to wait for a disruption, because it's going to happen. Whether you're with Jesus or not, life brings changes. Life brings things that we didn't plan for. But actually, I think if that's going to happen, I want to be with Jesus. I want him to be with me in the midst of the storm. I want to be like Joseph, and when I'm in prison or I'm a servant and it looks like I'm heading in the opposite direction, I want him to be with me. I want to know that he's got steadfast love and I can't earn it, no matter whether things are disastrous or things are really rosy. He can't love me anymore. But his plan is ultimately going to work together for good. And I love this verse because it's not just for my good, it just says for good. So actually, like Joseph, all the things he went through led to good for him, but led to good for his brothers as well. So maybe the things that we're going through, the disruptions, the change in direction, aren't just for our good, but are for good for other people. And we might never know that. That's the wonder of it. We might get to heaven and God says, do you know what, that thing that happened to you, it was really awful at the time and I know I brought you through it, but look at all the good that came from that. I want to be part of a plan that's like that. And so I just encourage you with this sentence, are you ready to be disrupted? Maybe it's not such a bad thing. And if you're already being disrupted, it doesn't mean that God isn't with you. It doesn't mean that you're outside of what his plan is for your life. He's right in it there with you. And if you don't know him, I'd encourage you to get to know him.